Welcome to the NASCAR and NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, here in our Charlotte studio, joined by Dale Jarrett, the NASCAR Hall of Famer, here to talk about the dirt race at Bristol Motor Speedway, second straight year that they've done this. DJ, I want to start with the winner. Definitely want to get to racing on dirt, because I know you've got some thoughts on that. A lot of people have thoughts on that, but I want to start with Kyle Busch. He wins for the 60th time. This one's historic for another reason. It extends his streak of seasons with at least one win. He's now tied with Richard Petty. But Kyle Busch unquestionably, DJ, stole this victory, and he admitted it as much post-race. He opened the media center session by noting that
chaos ensued, I guess, and then we were able to make it through and steal a win, back into one.
Referencing something that he had said earlier this year at Las Vegas when Alex Bowman did it. And then he elaborated a little bit further when he was asked about it.
Jenna Fryer, Associated Press. Kyle, when Alex Bowman won in Vegas, you were kind of upset he backed into it. You did use the word when you first got into the media center that you backed into this one. Is there a difference in who backs into it and when and how?
I think you take them how you get them. You know, I feel like we ran up front all night long. I actually passed Kyle Larson. Write that down. You know, I ripped the lip, as they say, a few times there on restarts in order to get some spots and stuff like that to get us in better positions and to be in contention to be up where we needed to be. So I think the fastest car tonight was actually the 14 car.
So, again, DJ, this is partly a thing because Kyle, when he lost the race at Las Vegas, said that Alex Bowman always backs into every win that he gets, which led to a T-shirt for Alex Bowman. But I'm just curious, as a Hall of Fame driver who might have stolen a win here or there in your career, does it matter if you back into a win? And is there a difference on how it's done and by whom? What's your take on all of that?
Yeah, no, I don't think that it makes any difference in the whole scheme of things, because I don't think you'll find a record book anywhere that says anything about how Kyle Busch won number 60. And many other drivers have had good fortune to go their way. And pretty much every driver that's been successful in the sport at some point in time had the bad side of that happen to them, that they were either knocked out of the way, something broke on, you know, right at the end of the race, whether it was the last lap, and allowed someone else to win. So you feel like that if you're fortunate enough to stay around and get one kind of handed to you. You know, I won't even say it has to be handed to you, because I think, you know, what Kyle Busch has been alluding to with Alex Bowman, it's been a strategy play, whether it's two tires to get track position, no tires. You know, they take some chances, and it's worked out quite a few times. And he does, and I'm speaking of Alex Bowman, does a great job of driving the car in those situations and getting the most out of it to be able to get those wins. So, yeah, it works both ways, and you just hope that at some point in time for the things that go against you, you feel like as a driver that you're repaid somewhat there. And I'm sure that, you know, it probably wouldn't take us long to think back of a few times with Kyle Busch, whether it was the pit crew or – and it wouldn't take long because we could ask them, because he usually says something about them. But, you know, or just something that right. has happened, you know. He did run extremely well. Looked like he was going to be a factor late in the race. I think that the longer run there at the end got him. He might have backed into one, but it was the backing into turn three by Chase Briscoe that allowed him to win. So.
That was what allowed him to win. I'm going to get to that. But you did touch on the other part that I wanted to get to about Kyle Busch, which is that, yes, this is what he's about. He's kind of got this persona of, you know, being the lightning rod and playing the villain a little bit. I think if you look back at Alex Bowman, we probably could agree that maybe Martinsville last year might be an example of, you know, when he spins out Denny Hamlin and wins the race, that might be an example more of backing into a win. But I think you're exactly right. I mean, Richmond last year, it was a strategy play with tires. Las Vegas, they win the race because play the cautions perfectly, and it came at Kyle Busch's expense, which obviously is why he kind of reacted to it the way it does. So, I mean, is it fair to criticize Busch a little bit at all here for a lack of consistency of, like, on one hand, yeah, this is cool, I'm going to take it, this happens, versus that guy always does it? Or is it maybe that it happened to Busch at Vegas and Bowman's last win kind of colors that a little bit?
Yeah, I think probably a little. I mean, you don't really know or think that that's going to happen for you on the good side, you know, because you don't go to races thinking that, well, if I can have some good fortune or somebody can have some misfortune here late, I might can get a win here. So you really never are thinking about that. You're just trying to win any way you can. But when it happens against you, it's easy to say. That's the way drivers are. You know, they forget kind of what you said that may have started something on the other side, but then whenever it comes your way, you're glad to take advantage of that because these things are hard to come by. And, you know, for that to be number 60, I don't look at it any different because he was going to get number 60 and he was going to continue his streak, which is phenomenal this day and time, anytime. You know, I thought it was phenomenal that Richard Petty was able to do it for 18 years, I believe it is.
Yep.
And for Kyle Busch to be able to do that, it's just amazing and a true testament to his abilities for so many years.
I think it meant something to him as well because even though dirt racing isn't a huge part of the Cup landscape anymore, even though Kyle Busch is one of the, I think, detractors. He was a little critical of it going into this race. He's a student of history. I think he appreciates the fact that he now has a win on dirt, like Richard Petty had wins on dirt.
Yeah, and I think you could tell in his interviews that kind of meant something to him, that, hey, I've won on this in pretty much every configuration that they've had here and able to get it done. Maybe not in his most dominating fashion, but a win is a win, as he said.
It is, and as you said, DJ, it comes as a result of Chase Briscoe attempting to pass Tyler Reddick on the last lap. I want to dissect all of this, but we'll start with Briscoe's move.
Was that an attempted pass, first off?
That's what I want to get your opinion
on. Okay.
Certainly. Well, I'll give him credit, and I'm sure you agree. Like, the last 20 laps, he does a great job chasing down Reddick. And this is after, you know, the first stage, he has the tire problem while leading, and he comes back from, you know, maybe having a car that's a little bit beat up. So he did a great job chasing down Reddick, but I think it would be kind to describe the pass as overly optimistic. It was certainly a desperation Hail Mary, and Briscoe was apologetic about it. He described it as...
The last lap, I knew I was going to be close, I felt like, on the white flag. And then when I got off the two and I was almost running him over down the back straightaway, I wouldn't have been able to go to sleep at night if I didn't try to throw a slider. I just follow in seconds. So, you know, like I said, I hate that I got into it. That's not how I want to race.
And Briscoe also said, if Tyler would have went to the top, I maybe would have cleared him. So this is why I want to bring you in on this, DJ, because, I mean, I know you're not, you know, a huge dirt racer, and this might underscore my lack of knowledge and understanding dirt racing, but I thought Tyler Reddick gave him enough room. but I mean,
three lanes.
Yeah, it seemed like enough. I mean, maybe I guess I don't understand it. That when someone attempts a slide job in dirt racing, I guess the natural inclination is for the leader to back off a little bit. And I guess Briscoe thought Reddick was going to do that, and he didn't. You know, what did you make of what Briscoe did?
Reckless. I mean, that's the only way that I can put it. I mean, he did not. He did a great job of running Tyler Reddick down. I think he clearly had the better car at that point in time. And I think a lot of that was because he had a little better tire with that. But he also had probably the best car the majority of the day in Chase Briscoe, it looked like. I think he probably passed more cars than anyone else there. So he did a fantastic job of getting himself in a position for all this to happen. But making that pass was always going to be the most difficult part of this, because he could run to his bumper a couple of times and he could see he would overdrive the corner a little bit, trying to just do something, you know, whether he could just get to his back bumper and upset Tyler Reddick a little bit. But what he did on the last lap, I'm not a fan of whatsoever. There was no chance, even with the little bit of a run that he had, Tyler Reddick gave him plenty of room. I don't know where he thinks that Tyler Reddick was down on him, and I read that whenever the notes from Stuart Haas came out last night, that he said that, and it really kind of took me aback, that because I went and watched it a few more times, and at no point in time did Tyler Reddick crowd him. Matter of fact, Tyler Reddick, I think, didn't. He probably knew what was going to happen when he was trying to distance himself, but it wasn't going to be. He didn't need to back off. I mean, obviously, if he would have backed out, he could have just crossed over, because Chase Briscoe was never going to make that corner. And the only thing that kept him out of the wall was Tyler Reddick's car. And I don't like – I know that the dirt enthusiasts out there say, hey, that's dirt racing. Yeah, we see that on asphalt. I saw Carl Edwards do it at Kansas with Jimmy Johnson, and we saw – just recently with Kyle Larson, you know, trying to make something happen at Darlington with Denny Hamlin there, and trying to just, you know, do whatever it took there. But in both cases, the leader was never taken out. That leader went on to win the race, and I think that's the big difference here, is that I appreciate making an effort, but taking the leader out in that situation, and it's even, to me, it's even worse yet that if you're going to take out the leader, you don't go on and win the race. So that makes the – and there was no chance he was ever going to win the race anyway, not with the way he went in there. But trying to say that he got – you know, that he didn't expect Tyler to hold him down, I don't know what he would have expected of Tyler Reddick if he was holding him down. That wouldn't have been a wrong thing to do, knowing that he couldn't get by in that way.
Yeah, and again, I'm not a dirt race expert, but from what I've seen of slide jobs and like sprints and midgets and just those open wheel cars, it does seem like they drive past the leader into the corner
yes.
and then slide up. And then I don't know if the leader is backing off or is anticipating that and knows that there's a crossover potential.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's, you know, Briscoe and Reddick, they're both dirt racing backgrounds. So maybe Briscoe thinks, oh, Reddick knows this is kind of how it works on the dirt racing side. But as an asphalt guy or as a stock car guy, I mean, should the rules of another series, I guess, or another form of racing even be applicable? And
But even if – I just don't know why he would have expected to think that Tyler Reddick was going to back out. I don't care if you're on dirt or whatever you're on. Why is the leader of the race, who has the preferred line, why is he going to back out at that point in time? Not even as far as Chase Briscoe drove the car into that corner, not at any point was he ever ahead of Tyler Reddick to even begin to get to a slide job. So it just, you know, it was a – I understand the thinking. It was just terribly wrong and mistimed. You know, I said this a couple of weeks ago because we were having a discussion about Ty Gibbs in the Xfinity series and his little run-in, if you will, which I didn't see much to it, at Richmond with John Hunter Nemechek. And I said then, I always want to see how, when you're put on the other side of that, how do you react? So Chase Briscoe is going to find himself in that position of being that leader. See how he handles the situation of being the one taken out from a win.
Because everybody is, to use Ty Gibbs as an example, like I'll go to Martinsville and say, like, I think that he was raced at Martinsville based on the way he raced Nemechek at Richmond. Mm-hmm. So there'd probably be repercussions. People look what Briscoe did here. And even though there's no more dirt races, they still think, well, maybe
slide
I can race
jobs happen on asphalt too. Yeah, just certain places that it's more of an opportunity for that to happen.
Well, perhaps even more surprising than the move itself, DJ, was the post-race scene. I think we were all expecting a fight, especially given recent events in NASCAR. Even Briscoe said he was ready to get punched when he went down there to Tyler Reddick to apologize. But yet we see this very sportsman-like greeting play out between Briscoe and Reddick. There's no anger at all. They just shake hands and barely even like raise an eyebrow at each other. And Reddick actually takes some blame for letting Briscoe get too close.
Well, I don't think I did everything right, to be honest with you, Regan. You know, Briscoe was able to run me back down there, and I should have done a little bit better job of, I don't know, I shouldn't let him get that close. You know, he ran me back down, worked really hard to do that, and racing on dirt, going for the move on the final corner, it's everything that, you know, as a driver you hope to battle for in his situation. And it made it really exciting for the fans. So it does suck, but we're able to finish second still. And if I'm being honest, you know, I should have done a better job and pulled away so, you know, he wasn't in range to try and make that move. That's how I look at it.
And then in the exchange with Briscoe, he says,
I'm sorry. I just wanted to let you know.
Hey, you didn't have a job running me down. I
kept trying. I was driving it so hard. I couldn't run any harder. But
it's
I'm sorry.
Good.
I wish you would have won.
I needed to drive away. And I mean, I let you get close.
That's all right. I just wanted to apologize.
It's all good.
Anyway, that's fun, though.
Until next time.
Yeah.
And he immediately accepts Briscoe's apology. So should Reddick have found any fault in what he did? Because it sounds like what you're saying, DJ. He gave him the room. There was nothing he did wrong, really, in letting him get that close.
You know, the only thing, is that I won't say that he did anything wrong to allow Chase Briscoe to get in that position. I just think that Chase's car was a little bit better, and that allowed him to get himself back in that position to make that run there on the last lap. I know, and I appreciated the honesty of Tyler Reddick. I've always had a lot of respect for him and his abilities. I found a whole new respect for the way that he handled this situation yesterday, because, you know, it doesn't go with what we've seen from a lot of the younger drivers in the sport, whether it be in the Cup side or the Xfinity side or the trucks. You know, it seems that, you know, they get pretty upset, and well, they should. I think that 95%, if not a higher percentage, of race drivers in the NASCAR series would have been upset tremendously by what happened right there, especially going for your first win and it being a cup win. You know, that there's so many things that go along with that, you know, of getting into the playoffs, and it just changes your whole season and the whole perspective. And that I appreciated the way that he did handle it, that it didn't have to be a fight. I would have liked to have seen Tyler Reddick a little more angry about the situation. I know that he understands it, because I know that there are certain things that in dirt racing that are different, but not in these stock cars, maybe. Does it correlate and transfer over to that type of racing? So, yeah. He took a lot of the blame for just letting him get that close for that to even be an issue. And I appreciate that part, that he felt like that he could have done a little bit more to even make it to where that situation would have never, ever happened. And I can appreciate that just as a competitor.
Yeah, it was an extremely classy response, and he deserves a lot of credit for handling the situation with aplomb. But to your point, he's going for his first win, and it's not only the driver involved. When you think about Richard Childress Racing, mm-hmm. and that isn't a team that's had a lot of wins recently, it's also the team where Dale Earnhardt made his fame. And yeah. I was struck by when Reddick and Briscoe were kind of hashing it out, that the stone-faced number eight team members who are behind Reddick,
yes.
they looked a lot more unhappy than he did. So I'm just curious, like, you've been there as a driver, you're inherently the leader of the team. Does the team, I would think maybe some of them might share some of your views that, like, hey, why didn't you really tell that guy off? Because yeah. we wanted to be in victory lane.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think that, you know, they felt like that, you know, they obviously did their job of putting their driver in the position, and he had done everything that he needed to do. Why wasn't he more mad? Not saying that he's got to be fighting mad.
Right.
But upset a little bit more. And especially because the first part that I really saw of Chase Briscoe coming into the scene there to where Tyler Reddick was, that he was almost laughing and saying, hey, man, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't mean to do it. You know, I was going to spin out anyway, and I was just hoping I wasn't going to hit you. Well, if you, yeah, you did. And, yeah. and so that would have made me even more angry that the guy is walking up, that he's just taken away my first win, and, you know, that he's kind of wanting to make a laughing matter of it, which is, it's not a laughing matter. I mean, it's a big deal to win these races and to say that you won on the dirt there. And again, Tyler Reddick did everything there, so I would have liked to have seen that. And you know, I can remember back a couple of times, and one of them being at Martinsville, to where, you know, my crew wishes that I would have moved another driver out of the way. And I had the opportunity in the last couple of laps to bump him. But I tried to do the right thing and just make a pass. I always said, anybody can knock somebody out of the way. I don't care who you are. You know, if you've got a fast enough car and you've run them down, you know, you can get to their bumper. And you know, we've all put a little bumper to people at some point in time. But on that last lap, to just go knock them out of the way, you know, I'd seen people do it. But I said, you know, I'm going to try to make my pass the way that I think that I can. And then that driver actually almost ran me into the wall coming out of turn four at Martinsville. So when that happened, I wish that I had have gone their route. But, you know, my crew was actually a little upset that I didn't. And, of course, they couldn't be upset with their driver for what, you know, yesterday, for what Tyler Reddick did or didn't do. It would have only been for not being more upset about the situation.
Yeah, there was nothing he could have done in the racetrack.
No, not
in
that
instance. How do you set things right with your team, or do you? Or is it just what you said? You just tell them, like, look, I've got my own code of ethics, and
yeah,
that's how I'm going to drive.
I think that's a, you know, good explanation. He showed that, you know, and that's the way that he's going to go about it. And you have to appreciate that. I mean, he is so very talented. Many wins are coming his way. You just hate to see whenever he's done everything right for the last, what, 80, 90 laps of that race, getting himself in the right position and leading the most laps and just doing everything that he needed to do for that to be taken away in that way. And but, you know, they have to stand by him, because, you know, that's the way he's going to race, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, I appreciate it a lot more than I think what a lot of other people that maybe are fans now, and all they want to see is, hey, if you get to him, let's have a little controversy. Let's go ahead and knock him out of the way. Or, you know, whenever you get taken out, you're supposed to fight about it. You don't always have to fight about it. You can talk. But I think the talk should have been a little more stern from his side.
So no question, a dramatic finish nonetheless, regardless of what happened post-race. It's certainly going to be a memorable one that people are going to be talking about. But I think we've got to talk about the quality of the racing overall, and does the dirt race deserve a third shot at Bristol Motor Speedway next year? I would prefer this to be the end of this experiment. I want to go back with recent events at Bristol, because I thought you made a really interesting point when we did our Motor Mouths call today. In 2007, they added progressive banking at Bristol, which turned it into a completely different track in which bottom no longer dominant. You didn't have the bump and run the way you had for so many years there. So they made multiple changes to address that. They tried grinding the top, then they added traction compound on the bottom. But as you noted, DJ, no one seemed to be complaining about there being only one lane for a lot of the race. And I guess that's just sort of how dirt racing is, and that's what people are good with Bristol. Is that kind of how we read that?
I don't know how you could just be good with it whenever that's considered not good racing when you have the concrete surface that is there.
Yeah.
But it's okay because it's dirt. I would think that they were adding dirt to make this something different. And it really, to me, wasn't anything different than when we had single file racing around the top. And honestly, it wasn't much different than single file racing back in my day when it was still asphalt that you raced around the bottom of it a lot of the time. And so that just allowed you more opportunities to maybe bump some people out of the way, and there was more contact there. But it just seems that this was accepted because it was dirt. You know, I know that the rain affected it, but I think that except for the first maybe 6, 8, 10 laps after those rains, that it seemed like the track was really slick. That once that went away, then it was back to just you had to be in the top, and making a pass on the bottom was very, very difficult. You had to have a much superior car, and so there wasn't that. But, you know, Chase Briscoe, you know, passed his way up to that, but it just seemed like that, you know, the things that we'd been complaining about and trying to have something different for the fans ended up being the same thing. It was just on dirt, and I don't have a problem with the cup cars racing on dirt. I think it needs to be done, and it's just nothing against the people at Bristol. I appreciate their efforts. I know it's a huge effort, and you know they run a lot of races there for over a month, and you know a lot of exciting racing. So it opens up opportunities there. But I think that these same things, if we want to run a dirt race, let's go to a dirt track and have a dirt race. There's plenty of really good dirt tracks out there that we could definitely go have a good dirt race at.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with that. We heard multiple drivers speak out and kind of question if this was the right place to do it. You know, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott among them, all of them were talking about this going into the race, some after the race, you know, asking whether more changes were needed, like, you know, can you remove their windshields? But I think the overall point that they were making was that Bristol is great as a concrete racetrack.
Yeah.
And can they run the pavement again? And I want to get your reaction to one thing that Kyle Busch said. Had some really good points, I thought, on this post-race. Kyle Busch said,
"But the biggest thing that hinders me from enjoying this is just the application. You know, we're trying to do something that isn't applicable, in my opinion. I mean, the first 10 laps of the race, everybody's shooting mud off, and you know, we're covering everybody's grills. Our windshields are covered just with the dirt going off the windshield and stuff like that. And you know, those guys talk about the windshields and stuff like that. If we get rid of the windshields, we could have tear offs and stuff. And yeah, that's fine. But the cars are 3,500 pounds, and you saw what it's like on the last corner of the last lap to drive around here every single lap. I mean, you are on edge. You are on your toes. You are just trying not to crash every single lap. Where when you're in a dirt car, I've now run micros, I've run dirt late models, I've been in a few different types of vehicles on dirt, and when there's grip, it's grip and rip. You know, you are driving the heck out of that thing. Makes you breathe hard. This thing here, you are just not breathing because you're so tensed up of not crashing. So it's just the application. But if it was a good show, it's a good show. I think Bristol's fine with or without. I've won on them all, so I think I have the best say. There were some bright spots for sure to the night, to this race. I don't know if the good outweighed the bad.
So that to me kind of gets to the essence of this, DJ, of what why I think that it may have run its course, is I don't think this race puts elite cup level drivers in the best light.
Yeah.
You know, I think Tyler Reddick, Chase Briscoe, dirt guys, it's great to watch them. Like you said, Briscoe had some amazing charges through the field, but I feel like it takes most elite level cup drivers and kind of makes them look more like Xfinity truck level drivers. Those are still good talents, but that's not what I expect to see in NASCAR's premier level. Like, I feel like dirt kind of diminishes the greatness of NASCAR's superstars. Like, to put it in Dale Jarrett terms, it's like asking a golfer to play 18 holes with three clubs and still expecting them to shoot eight under par. I want to give cup drivers a chance to show why they're the best at what they can do, and I don't know if dirt does that at Bristol.
Yeah. I can, obviously I can't put it the way that you do because you're much better at that, but
no.
I think yeah, it was an idea, and it's been given a couple of years, and I just think that it's time to say, look, we have really good. I mean, just think about the night races that we've had recently at Bristol,
right,
on the concrete surface. Just how exciting those have been, and I just don't know why we would want to take that if they don't want to do two races. I think that would not be the case. They want to do two races there,
absolutely.
But you know, somehow if we fits, you know, they're just insistent that they have a dirt race. I say go somewhere else, but let's not mess up a great racetrack. I mean, it's been one of the most exciting races, and it's not like, you know, I'm sure it got some viewership last night because, you know, everybody, after a long day of celebrating Easter and being with family, they sat down and were able to see a race. There's nothing wrong with that. Let's just do it on the concrete surface that is supposed to be run on there. And you know, the concrete's hard enough as it is, and I you know, the car's a handful, but it provides great racing, and I think that it's time that we go back to that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you mentioned the night race last year was one of the best of the season with the whole Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick battle. But even if you go back 2 years ago, I think June of 2020, and you had the great Logano Elliott battle toward the end. I mean, yeah, it seems to me like if you've got like a Knoxville Raceway out there in Eldora and you want to put your dirt race there, great. But like Bristol's got to be too.
Yeah, and you know, and I know it's a learning process with it, but hopefully we won't have to do any more learning. But you know, just with the grills getting filled up with mud at the start of that race, and that handicapping, even the pole sitter, you know, had to pit before that. I just, you know, and having to throw a caution for that, and I know that they said that if that happened, that's what they need to do. But you know, there's just so many things that these stock cars, the way that they are, and if you're not going to deviate from the rules too much with it, then the experiment should be over, and we should just do what we do. Dirt racing is great across the country, and I grew up going to dirt races with my dad, and you know, loved that, and you know, I still like to see good dirt racing, but I don't think that trying to manufacture something and make it a dirt track for those reasons, especially with the Cup Series, is the way to go.
Well, it certainly was wild, and I don't expect that the wildness will subside at all this weekend because NASCAR is going to Talladega Super Speedway. Second Super Speedway races, as they call them, not really restrictor plate races anymore, but second one of the season after the Daytona 500. What do you think, DJ, going back to Daytona? You know, I was looking at the box score this afternoon, and I'd forgotten. I mean, Daytona was pretty normal. You had like four multi-car crashes, mm-hmm. despite all the discussion around parts and limited inventories and how we're going to get cars. You think we can expect more of the same this weekend at Talladega? What are you expecting?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this a little bit as they got to talking about Talladega a number of times yesterday, of course, with the interruptions and stuff, and then, of course, announcing that Dale Jr. is going to be in their broadcast booth, which took us all by surprise, all of us that didn't know anyway. But that aside, I just started thinking about the racing and what I saw at Daytona, and, you know, it was a lot of the same things. And you know, the crashes come from aggressive and over-aggressive driving and pushing and bump drafting. And blocking, and that's not going to change at Talladega, where you have more room to do that and more room to cover and trying to make all of that happen. So I can see three wide racing, and we didn't. That was the one thing that we really didn't see at Daytona that we have seen recently was a lot of three wide racing. It seemed that those cars didn't want to do that. That middle didn't seem to be a place that you wanted to be. That kind of took me back to old days as to when if you got put in the middle, you know, with the aerodynamics of the older cars, and I'm speaking of back in the 90s, you found yourself in a bad spot.
Yeah.
You didn't know which way your car was getting ready to go. So you basically just had to kind of roll out and try to find a hole to get in. And it felt like that you threw out an anchor too when you were doing that with no help. So, I can foresee some three wide and possibly four wide racing for a number of laps here. And so how long can they do that before somebody makes that slight mistake and then the contact, and then we have big one, because they're all going to be right there together, except for if you get a few that are going to decide to hang out. But we'll have to see if anybody thinks that's the proper way to go about it here, with it not being, you know, in the playoffs or anything like that. So, because, you know, this is a lot of drivers feel that this is their opportunity to go grab that win and be a part of the playoff scenario.
I mean, one would be certainly Brad Keselowski. He probably made the most waves at the Daytona 500. I mean, he had a good car, but he was involved in a couple of crashes, made a few guys mad, and he still he ran fairly well at Bristol Dirt, but he's still kind of hit and miss most weeks, and I'm sure he's looking at this as an opportunity like a lot of other guys, you know, Bubba Wallace and
Stenhouse.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I couldn't believe it when I thought about it today, but 9 races in the season. I mean, we're a quarter of the way through the season. We're almost a third of the way through, or more than a third of the way through the regular season. This is probably going to be the opportunity for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, it really is. Even though we've seen, you know, some first-time winners here, but we're talking about people now that we haven't seen up really mixing it up other than at Daytona. You know, and the three names that you mentioned there with Brad and Bubba Wallace and Ricky Stenhouse, they were all right in the mix at Daytona. And they realized, and of course, this is where, you know, Bubba's win came. And so he's got to be feeling like, you know, this is, you know, he's ready to get there and make this happen again, that this is his opportunity. And there's a whole nother list of drivers that are in that scenario that believe and realize that, you know, with this car and this track, that this is their chance, and they're willing to take those chances and put themselves in position to try to make this and you know, if you will, Michael McDowell, you know, upset from the Daytona 500 of last year.
Yeah.
So you know, it's highly possible that we could see another, not just talking about a first time winner for this year, but a first time winner.
Yeah, it's certainly been a theme of 2022, and we will be watching and listening to Dale Jr. As part of the Fox broadcast this weekend. So something to look forward to. But always look forward to having our other Dale Jarrett, join us here on the NASCAR NBC podcast. So thanks for being here, DJ.
Absolutely.
Our thanks again to Dale Jarrett for joining us on the NASCAR NBC podcast. Thanks to NASCAR NBC producers Emily Conboy and Aaron Feldstein for lining up DJ as our guest. A reminder that we also taped this podcast on camera ahead of NASCAR America Motormouths in our NBC Sports Charlotte studio. Motormouths airs Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern on Peacock, and all the Motormouths episodes and clips are on the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel. You also can find lots more great content and highlights daily, as well as the on-camera version of this podcast. So make sure you visit and subscribe to the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel. And a quick programming note, in addition to Motormouths and the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel's daily content, there is Indy 500 testing this week at Indianapolis Motor Speedway on April 20th and 21st. You can catch full coverage from the Brickyard for both sessions Wednesday and Thursday on Peacock Premium. April 20th gets underway at noon Eastern, and April 21st starts at 10 a.m. Eastern. Again, you can stream both full days on Peacock Premium. If you have any NASCAR NBC podcast feedback, you can send it to me on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR NBC podcast.